Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how were some synagogue buildings able to survive World War II intact, and what happened to many of them later? Jonathan Weber is a British social anthropologist with special expertise on European Judaism and European Jews. He taught for 18 years at the University of Oxford, and then for 8 years was the UNESCO Chair in Jewish and Interfaith Studies at the University of Birmingham, England. In 2011, he moved to Krakow to take up a professorship at the Institute of European Studies of the Jagiellonian University. Since 1988, Professor Weber has been researching and documenting the rich history of Polish-Jewish relations and the cultural heritage of Polish Jews. He's chairman of the Galicia Jewish Museum in Kazimierz, Krakow, and a member of the International Auschwitz Council, advising, promoting, and aiding the Auschwitz-Birkenau State Museum in its various activities. He's author of Rediscovering Traces of Memory, The Jewish Heritage of Polish Galicia, published by the Indiana University Press in 2009. Professor Weber has been awarded the Gold Cross of Poland's Order of Merit for services to Polish-Jewish dialogue. He spoke with us about Jewish heritage in Poland and the revival and preservation of Jewish culture in Poland today.
Thank you very much for speaking with us. Could you speak with us first about Jewish heritage in Poland? Because I think a lot of our listeners think that there is nothing, that they're empty fields and nothing.
There is a tremendous amount of Jewish heritage in Poland. It depends about what you mean by Jewish heritage. We have probably about 1,300 Jewish cemeteries in Poland, deriving from the period before the war. About a third of them are in pretty good condition, with a lot of tombstones still intact, dating sometimes from many centuries back. Jews have lived in Poland for 1,000 years. And we have quite a few cemeteries with tombstones at least 200 or 300 years old. Some of them are in poor condition because they've deteriorated over time. Some are in poor condition because they've simply fallen down, haven't been properly restored. But yes, there are quite a few cemeteries here that will give a very good idea of the kind of Jewish world which existed before the war. For example, here in Krakow, we've got one Jewish cemetery from the 19th century, which has got tombstones of Hasidic rabbis all the way through to Yiddish tombstones of Jews who are communists and secular Jews who have their inscriptions in Polish because they were fully assimilated into Polish society. And we have a cemetery full of this range of different kinds of Jews. So cemeteries are interesting. The majority of the cemeteries, however, in Poland are in very poor condition. The majority of those 1,300 cemeteries are in poor condition because the Germans quite deliberately wanted to destroy not only Jews but also any evidence of Jewish culture here. So they simply stole the tombstones and reused them as building materials to pave roads or to pave their yards, or if they didn't have time, they told the local Poles to help themselves to the tombstones because the Jews would not be coming back.
I'd really like it if you would tell us now about the Jewish cemetery that you, with the help of the townspeople, restored.
There's a very small village of about 1,200 people, which was the birthplace of my grandfather. He left when he was 2 years old in the 1880s. And I went back to have a look at that village, which nobody's ever heard of, because it's not a famous place. There were no famous people from there, no famous rabbis or scholars or artists or film producers or literary people. Nobody famous from there at all. When I got there, I found the cemetery was completely abandoned. There was no fence around it, no sign saying that this was a Jewish cemetery. there was not one tombstone there. In fact, it took me a while to identify its precise location because of the absence of any visual symbols at all. So, to cut a long story short, I made the decision that I wanted to restore it in honor of my grandfather, or my great-grandfather, who came from there. And so I went to see the priest, I went to see the mayor, I went to see the local school teacher, I went to see the leading people in this small village, which is, as I say, only about 1,200, 1,300 people there, and told them that I would like to help them restore what was part of their history. And that touched their hearts. I said they really wanted to have access to their that part of their history and didn't really know how to access it, because they didn't know anything about Jewish culture and didn't know anything really what to do with this. And all of a sudden I came along and said, don't you worry, let's work together on this project. And we did. We worked together on this project. And I engaged a local contractor to build a fence. And then people started giving back the tombstones. They knew where some of them were. They had got them in their barns and in their yards, and they knew they were Jewish tombstones from the Hebrew writing on them. It was 75 years since the German occupation, so this was not something they'd done themselves. It was their parents or grandparents who'd taken these stones, but they figured out that these were Jewish tombstones. So we restored all that, and we had a ceremony to reconsecrate the Jewish cemetery, and the local priest took part in the ceremony at my invitation, and the chief rabbi of Poland came. There was a very big crowd. We had 600 people came to the ceremony. Half the village came to the ceremony. But then I'd really reached out to the village. I had sent an invitation to every single household in Polish and produced a booklet in Polish about the history of the Jews of this village, and distributed a copy to every household, and really made an effort to do what I call Jewish cultural diplomacy, to reach out to people to make them feel involved. Not, I hasten to add, the way unfortunately some Jews do it, just come in and parachute in and do something like put up a brick wall around the Jewish cemetery and then leave, and then get surprised when there are swastikas that appear, because they've made no effort to try to explain to the local people the importance of this project. So for me, it was very important to work with the local school, and part of the project was including funds to have professors coming from Warsaw and elsewhere to give the students lectures about Jewish history of Poland and to teach the young generation something about who Jews were. So all this was very important, to do this thing nicely, courteously, politely. First of all, it's the only sensible strategy, but that is what Jewish values and Jewish ethics are anyway, to reach out to people in a spirit of harmony and peace and reconciliation. So that's what I did in that village.
Is anything similar being done anywhere else, not just in the area of cemeteries, but in the area of cooperation with the Poles to either preserve or educate about Jewish heritage?
Well, I've mentioned cemeteries already. There is, of course, at least two other areas, if not more. One is the area of synagogues, old synagogues, and the other is, of course, sites of martyrdom from the Holocaust. Obviously, Auschwitz being the most famous site of martyrdom. But let me take synagogues first. There are, again, it is estimated, between 200 and 300 synagogue buildings still standing in Poland. Many of them have been converted to other uses. There's one famous case in a city in the north of Poland called Poznan, where the synagogue was turned by the Germans into a swimming pool, and it's still being used by the local Polish population as a swimming pool. There's been a huge fuss about that, and I think in very recent times it is now being turned back into something a bit more suitable. But synagogues are often used for many purposes. If they were large buildings, they often survived because the Germans needed large building as stables for their horses during the war. We often tend to forget that horses were terribly important in World War II. Not everything was mechanized, and horses were very important. So the Germans needed stables for their horses, and they often used synagogues for that purpose. So therefore, the building may not have been, how to say, treated in a respectful manner, obviously, and they may not have looked after the building, but it was a building, and therefore, after the war was over, it very often happened that a synagogue would have survived for that reason. However, in the years after the war, the buildings deteriorated if they're not properly maintained, the holes in the roof, rainwater, etc., etc., not being maintained, the synagogue slowly started deteriorating. And so quite a number of towns find deteriorating synagogues in their territory. So what they usually do is they demolish them because there's no Jewish community left in those places. There is no Jewish community that can pay for the maintenance or upkeep, and they may constitute hazards for passers-by, the large chunks of masonry that sort of fall off and hit people on the head as they're walking down the street. So in many of these cases, they have been demolished. Sometimes they've been restored but used for another purpose entirely, for example, as a cultural center or as a library building or something like that, depending on the needs of the local community. You have to remember that Jews live not only in the big cities but also in the small cities and the very small towns and even in the villages. So therefore, every town has got a different story. It's several thousand places that the Jews lived in Poland before the war, and the Jews of Poland was the largest Jewish community in the world until the 1920s, when for the first time the Jews of the United States became more numerous. So there are many of these synagogues which are still standing, and what is now happening is that the local authority would like to restore its synagogue in some dignified way. So you get a number of Polish activists who are very proud of the fact that their town or their village had a Jewish community before the war. There are no Jews living there now. Poland is a much more ethnically homogeneous society compared to what it was before the war. And some of the young generations are nostalgic for the fact that there was, you know, different minorities living in their towns. It was a multicultural society, which isn't anymore.
What do you think has prompted this interest in restoring as much of a multicultural society as they can? I mean, after a couple of generations anyway of being rather monocultural, I guess would be the word.
I think it's important for your listeners to realize that there's been a major change in Eastern Europe since 1989, since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Berlin Wall and the return to democracy of one country after another all over Eastern Europe, culminating in 2004. With the entry of many of these countries to the European Union, including Poland, became a member of the European Union in 2004. So that's 10 years now. So the young generation going to college today want to create for themselves a new kind of culture. Their parents and grandparents may have been communists, or at least living under a communist regime and being a member of the Communist Party and part of their natural order of things under communism. They may have been, a generation before that, severely nationalist, because Poland only became an independent country after the First World War in 1918, having been occupied for 125 years by Germany, Austria and Russia. It didn't exist in the 19th century, so they became an independent country only in 1918. So the great-grandparents of today's generation became nationalists. They were trying to create a new country. They didn't have a country. Just like in Israel, we haven't had a Jewish state, so people who live in Israel are very nationalist. They want to create a strong Jewish state. Okay, that's what Poland was like in the 1920s. They wanted to create a strong Polish state and became very nationalist and a bit narrow-minded, not interested in other minorities, just interested in themselves. Yet Poland had got a lot of minorities living here, and it wasn't ideal for any of these minorities. It certainly wasn't ideal for the Jews either, but there was democracy, so the Jews could have their own theatres, they could have their own newspapers, they could have their own schools. Hasidim could be Hasidim, Zionists could be Zionists, secular Jews could be secular Jews. They may not all have been able to get to the top positions of Polish government because there was a sense of discrimination against members of any minority group if you were not Polish, 100%. But Jews did have those freedoms. Now, what's happened since the Holocaust is that there are no Jews, or very small numbers of Jews, to be given these kinds of freedoms. So the young generation want to try to go back to a world which has been lost because of the successive occupations. First of all, the German occupation, which brought on the Holocaust, and then the Soviet occupation, which brought on communism. And they've had these two occupations 50 years, from 1939 to 1989. And suddenly, in 1989, they were free once again, and they want very energetically to rebuild their society. Now, some people want to go back to the old nationalism of Poland for the Poles, but it's generally thought today that this is a minority of young people. Most people want to live their lives just like Europeans everywhere, where there's a multicultural society, live and let live. Some people are vegetarians and some people, you know, are meat eaters. Some people are peaceniks. Some people are more nationalist. Life is full of different kinds of people, and they want to take part in a vibrant society in which has room for everybody. So one of the ways they do that is to try to give honour to the minorities that used to live here. And the Jews are in the first row here because they were the largest minority, 10% of the population of Poland before the war, though there are other minorities here too, and those minorities are also being given honour and credit as well.
So how is this being manifested? What are they doing to either revive or preserve this Jewish heritage aside from the cemeteries?
Well, one thing they can do is they can try to preserve a local synagogue, if there is one. Try to preserve their local Jewish cemetery, if there is one. Go there on All Souls Day to light candles. Jews don't have a custom to go and visit cemeteries for a specific ritual once a year, but Polish Christians do. And going to the Jewish cemetery on All Souls Day on the 1st of November each year is becoming quite routine now. It depends what they are. I mean, some people in the local level are writing guidebooks to the history of the Jews. They'll tell you which house was built by which architect and which Jewish family lived there. They will write books and stories about the great Hasidic rabbi who lived in their town and try to write up some of the stories of his life and accomplishments about which ordinary Polish children would otherwise have not learned anything. They will mount Jewish art festivals, and the biggest thing of all is to have a Jewish culture festival, of which the most important is the one in Krakow, which attracts probably around 20,000 people each June, the beginning of July, a 10-day festival with about 200 different events in it over that period of time. And it's extraordinary. It finishes on the last night with a huge open-air concert of Jewish music, which is not only Jewish liturgical music, but also modern klezmer rearranged as jazz, or a rap, different kinds of modern representations of traditional Jewish melodies and themes, and it's enormously popular. We have also a ceremony each year to honour Poles who have contributed to the revitalization and honouring of the Jewish cultural heritage. And every year we have about a dozen people who get these medals presented by the Israeli ambassador.
Other than music, what kind of events are there during this culture festival?
Well, there could be lectures. For example, I gave a lecture last year on Jewish values, classical Jewish values. The year before, I gave a public lecture on Jewish attitudes to other religions. There could be panel discussions on the future of Eastern Europe after communism, panel discussions on something connected with present-day Israel, or this year at the festival there was a series of panel discussions on the kibbutz movement. People don't know very much about the Jewish involvement with socialism, communism, and socialist Zionism, such as in the kibbutz movement. Even most Jews today, I don't think, are really well up to speed on the history of the kibbutz movement. But here in Krakow, young Poles know an awful lot about the kibbutz movement now. The very, very well attended series are showing films. Also, other events could be films, Jewish films, including Israeli films, pre-war Yiddish films with Polish subtitles. there was a very important Jewish film industry before the war, which actually continued after the war as well for a limited period, which is not so well known outside Poland, but it was an important film industry. And these films are now having a bit of a comeback, a revival, you might say. There are cookery demonstrations. This year there was a very interesting series of cookery demonstrations, Jewish food from Yemen, Jewish food from Spain, Jewish food from Greece, Jewish food from Lithuania. There's a big controversy about how to prepare gefilte fish, stuffed fish, whether the Galiciana recipe from southern Poland is preferable to a Lithuanian recipe for gefilte fish. Cookery demonstrations are certainly very important. And then there is, of course, exhibitions on Jewish synagogue architecture, Jewish synagogue paintings. Synagogues here were frequently painted from floor to ceiling. In fact, even the ceilings would be painted here, and people, you know, I find it interesting to learn more about that.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Yes, Holocaust sites. I mentioned those before. It is impossible to know how many mass graves there are in Poland. The Jewish world in general has not made it a priority to find them. On the contrary, certainly in Ukraine, it was a French Roman Catholic priest who took the initiative, as one of the first people, Father Patrick Desbois, who to go and find mass graves of Jews who had been shot in forests and open fields and all the rest of it, which have not been marked by the Jewish world. Other than those mass graves, which are very important, Jewish communities not only don't know about these mass graves, but they don't conduct ceremonies on the anniversaries. So, for example, if a whole town's Jews was wiped out on the 12th of August 1942, you do not have Jewish ceremonies on the 12th of August each year going back to that mass grave to say prayers for the souls of the departed. And that is something which I think in the next generation will happen. We have collectively as a Jewish people been enormously backward in coming to terms with what needs to be done for Holocaust commemoration. On the other hand, what has been commemorated here, more or less entirely at Polish initiative, is the preservation of concentration camp sites. The Polish government paid for the conservation of Auschwitz without any money coming from the Jewish world whatsoever, from 1947, when Auschwitz was turned into a museum, until very recently. The Israeli government has given $1 million as part of a major fundraising budget of $150 million to conserve the barracks and other ruins in Auschwitz-Birkenau. But the Auschwitz Museum is dedicated to preserving the memory of what happened there. There are about 200 staff, full-time staff, who work there, plus guides, part-time guides. There is a historical research department. There is an archive there. There are exhibitions in Auschwitz on all aspects of the subject. And there are people who devote their whole lives to living in Auschwitz and presenting its memory to the future generations. Again, staffed almost entirely by Poles. And you do not have whole delegations of Jews who are going there to do that work. We have, as a Jewish people, delegated that to the Poles, which, you know, there may be historical reasons for that, but looking at it in an objective way seems strange that we have delegated that to non-Jews. There's no reason why we shouldn't, but we also need to acknowledge the fact that non-Jewish Poles have taken the initiative on this. And I don't speak only about Auschwitz, but the Treblinka, where the main monument there, there's nothing left of the original camp, but the main monument there is based on a sculpture created by Polish sculptors and architects. It's a very good monument, very moving monument in many ways, but it's not a Jewish monument. Majdanek, again a non-Jewish sculptor and architect who designed that. Belzec, which is almost completely forgotten by Jews. Nobody's ever heard of Belzec, confusing it with Bergen-Belsen in Germany, which is another camp entirely. Belzec, where 500,000 Jews were murdered in 1942, with only 3 or perhaps 4 survivors, being completely forgotten by the Jewish world. There in Belzec, a new monument was put up, designed by 3 young Polish architects. It's absolutely magnificent piece of work. But that was a project which was undertaken jointly by the Polish government together with the American Jewish Committee. And it was actually a very good example of cooperation, and that worked very well. But that was an exception which confirms the rule. Sobibor, which is not very well looked after at all, and in fact closed down briefly through shortage of money, 250,000 Jews murdered in Sobibor, and very little to be seen there today. Chełmno, which is a disgrace, it was the first concentration camp, 200,000 Jews murdered there. Not very much to be said about Chełmno, unfortunately. And there are other smaller labour camps where the Jewish heritage of victimhood has been very faithfully preserved. I was at the dedication of a new Holocaust museum in a labour camp at a place called Pruszków near Dębica, which consisted of the reconstruction of two barracks. One barrack which was entirely about Polish victimhood, and the other barrack, which the exhibition inside which was entirely devoted to Jewish victimhood, and the whole thing being put together by Poles. And I was very impressed when I saw this.
Thank you very much. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.